A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 20, 1994, in the series The First Testament, entitled Trust That Survives Tragedy. The scripture readings are Psalm 137 and Habakkuk 1, verses 1 through 6, chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, and chapter 3, verses 17 through 29. The texts for the sermon are Habakkuk 3, verses 17 through 19, and Psalm 137, verse 1. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
God brought them home, and one in whom indomitable trust found place was the Hebrew prophet Habakkuk. The brief prophecy by his name is a dialogue between him and God. He raises a question and God answers. He raises a question and God answers. God gives a vision and he responds with a paean of praise. Israel's story. We have been following in broad strokes the story of that people. We've been following the story of the people of Israel because it's our story. For the Christian movement that follows in the wake of Jesus is a movement that comes out of the womb of Israel. For Jesus never intended to be more than an observant Jew. The God of Israel was his God. The scriptures of Israel were his scriptures. The hope of Israel was his hope. And so for us to understand ourselves, we need to understand that story. For it is that story that has shaped our identity as well. We have followed in broad strokes that story, seeing the beginning of Israel created in the Exodus event when, under the leadership of Moses, Israel was set free from the oppression of Egypt's bondage. We followed them through the wilderness and into the promised land, into Canaan or Palestine, as we would call it. We saw them move from a loosely connected tribal confederacy to a monarchy in order that they might be a nation as other nations. But there was a difference, because with the rise of the monarchy, there was also the rise of the prophetic word, the prophetic voice that was spoken into the social, economic, and political arena of the life of Israel. The king of Israel was reminded ever and again that he was not really absolute, not really sovereign, for he served by the grace of God and under the sovereignty of God, who alone is the sovereign of heaven and earth and the course of human affairs. We find them now, after that kingdom had gone on for a couple of centuries, with a moment of glory, a golden age, and then downhill all the way. We find them 722 BC, the northern kingdom dispersed by the great Assyrian Empire. The southern kingdom, Judah, remaining yet for a time, but in 587, Judah too, ripped from her roots, the temple burned, the walls of Jerusalem thrown down, and the cream of the crop of Judah brought in exile to Babylon. That's where we find them today. And it's not the end of the story. But with Advent Sunday coming next Sunday, the season of Advent, I'll have opportunity to tell you more of the story. For the Advent hope is really a reflection of the hope of Israel. For the amazing thing is that although we find Judah today in exile in a foreign land, what might have been the end was not the end. For Judah survived, and indeed Israel survives. And that is the amazing truth that I would have you focus on today. The fact that out of the tragedy and the disaster, the national catastrophe that overcame this people, whose sorrow and sadness was expressed so plaintively in Psalm 137, there is yet a continuing people, because paradoxically and surprisingly, it happened then, as it happens so often, that in the midst of tragedy, trust is kindled. And out of trust, hope is born. And hope lays hold of newness. That's an amazing truth. It is one of the wonderful learnings from the whole biblical story, that tragedy, rather than being the end, so often becomes prelude to a new beginning. That in tragedy, trust is born. And from trust, hope springs. And out of the hope, newness arrives. Think about that for a moment. It is really an amazing paradox. It is one of the great values of learning the biblical story, of being steeped in that biblical tradition. There's nothing there that denies the darkness. There's nothing there that pooh-poohs the tragedy. The plaintive tones of Psalm 137 express the despair of a people who are being mocked by their conquerors, who say, "Sing us a song." And they say, "We can't sing a song in a foreign land." And then they begin to remember Jerusalem. And isn't it often the case in our experience that we begin to remember and to value what we have lost? It was in the tragedy of the exile that they began to remember, and they actually dug deeper into the spiritual depths of that tradition that had shaped them as a people. Psalm 137, the last verses were not sung for you. For how can you sing expressions of raw anger? Psalm 137, the last couple of verses are verses that those of us of delicate taste would wish were not even in the Scripture. They are expressions of anger and hatred so violent that they can hardly be duplicated. The hatred and the anger focused at the conquering Babylonian, the awful expression that chills us, "I would that your little ones were dashed against a stone." But it's there, and it is true to human experience. No, don't hear me this morning as saying that the darkness isn't really so dark, or the coldness not so cold, or the tragedy not so bad. That's not being faithful to the biblical story. Habakkuk, for example. Habakkuk looked about him also. He was living right at this hinge point also. He looked about him, he saw the chaos and the corruption and the violence, and he cried out to God, as we have done as well, have we not? Oh God, how long, how long? The mystery of the world is the absence of God when all goes wrong. Where is God? How long, O Lord, will you cause me to see this violence? How long will you withhold your hand? Where are you, in other words? And then there comes to the prophet this consciousness. I'm doing a work in your day that you wouldn't believe if you knew it. I'm doing a work in your day, invisible, unknown to peasant and king alike. But be sure that history is not simply unraveling apart from my presence. And so the prophet says, I'll go into the watchtower of faith and I will wait to see the vision. And the word of the Lord comes to him saying, write this vision large so that one running will be able to read it. Wait for the vision, for it will surely come. Know this, that the unjust will fail, but the righteous one will live by faith. And then the vision comes. And in panoramic view, he sees, as though the film is flashing through his mind, the history of his people, in response to which we have that marvelous expression of devotion and praise. Although I am stripped bare of everything, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will exalt in the God of my salvation. How do you figure it? How do you figure it? Will you note this morning that I'm not trying to explain it, but I am pointing to it. I am pointing to a phenomena concrete in history, Israel's history. As I said a moment ago, Israel survived. And then added, and survives. Israel survives. When there was no human reason for it to survive except that it remembered and began again to believe and to hope, and to grasp a new beginning. Ah, a conviction that somehow or other there is some presence or some power engaged with this whole historical process which we cannot discern nor explain, and yet in which we trust. Was that it? Wasn't that it for Habakkuk? Wasn't that it when he was able to say, take everything away, the crops from the field and the herd from the stall, take it all away, and I will yet rejoice in God my strength. I will exalt in the God of my salvation. How do you explain it? That indomitable trust that issues in hope that waits for newness. It is not naive. A faith that has at its center a cross on which one was crucified cannot be naive. Israel that survives cannot be naive when it looks back in its own recent history to the cremation of 6 million of its number, the Holocaust standing there as a hard knot in the midst of human history. Who can believe after the Holocaust? Who could believe after the Son of God was crucified? Who could believe? That's the mystery of faith. I can't explain it. But it's not head-in-the-sand stuff. It's not pie-in-the-sky stuff. It's the stuff, it's the blood and guts of human experience, out of which, amazingly, the human spirit yet trusts and hopes and grasps the dawning of a new day. That's the miracle which I cannot explain, but to which I point you, and why it's so important that we know that story. That's why some weeks ago I began this whole tale. Because I remember my old Professor Berikoff, who told me that he couldn't speak to the younger generation in his secularized society because, he said, they are not prodigals. The prodigals still knew there was a home and a parent. They are not prodigals. They are the children of the prodigals. The children of the prodigals don't even know there's a home or a father. They have no center. Homeless. The sign of the end of the 20th century. Masses of people homeless, adrift, estranged and alienated. Exile, one of the biblical images that best bespeaks our own day, homelessness. No rootage. No place to stand. But the story, which continues to be told, doesn't explain, but it points us to a reality, and that is that there is no night so dark but what the dawn will follow. Trust is that which enables one or a people to survive tragedy, to experience loss, to come to total despair, only to find indomitable faith rising, hope springing, newness dawning. That's the wonder of the tradition which has shaped us and given us birth, and which we keep alive by telling the story to those brought to the baptismal fount today, in order that with us they may place their trust in the God of Israel, the God of Jesus. Next Sunday, Advent 1, we'll sing, O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here. And it will be our cry. We'll hear the Advent word, comfort ye, my people, says your God. And we'll find our faith renewed and our hope restored that that same God will surely bring us home. Thank God. Thank God.